quick heads up before we start. For the first 10 minutes, my mic has a crackly sound that comes and goes. Feel free to skip ahead to 11 minutes if you need to. I just moved and I'm trying to get my equipment set up properly, so thank you for your patience. Now on with the episode. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars, 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today is all about minutes 106 through 110 of Star Wars, A New Hope, the motion picture. We're getting into the Battle of Yavin today. It's super exciting, and Alex and Molly Damon from Star Wars Explained are here to kick us off in this very momentous occasion in Star Wars history. Hello. Well,
thank you for having us. This was like the perfect 5 minutes to have me on for, at least.
Yes, I'm just here for emotional support whenever he has to talk about Biggs, his big scene. Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, when I think of Biggs, I think of you. I think of Alex. And by extension, I think of Molly, for the emotional support. But this is one of those things. Well, for those who don't know, I mean, I'm sure everyone here knows Star Wars Explained channel, but I didn't know until like more recently how big of a Biggs fan you were. I don't know, you might be Biggs's biggest fan, possibly.
Yeah, I was just pointing to something because I have one of these in my office. The collection has spilled over into my office.
Yeah, I ran out of room in my office, so now it has to.
a little Biggs. What is this? It's not a Funko Pop. Mighty Mugs.
Mighty Mugs. Yeah, it's like a Target thing.
He's already got one of these in his office, but we got an extra one, so now it belongs to me.
Is that actually a mug that you're holding up? It looks like a doll.
Yeah, it's more like it's kind of like a Funko Pop. I don't know why they call them mugs.
Oh, okay. So you can't actually drink out of that. That would be cool, though, if there was like a straw and it was like a big sippy.
I would like that. Maybe we can alter this to make it an actual mug.
He does have a Biggs mug, though, that I got for him on Etsy.
That's true.
That would make a good Lego stream, just putting a straw in that. Well, okay, Biggs is this maybe the star of this scene in for some people, but there's a lot else going on. Here, as we get into the Battle of Yavin, before we like super dive into it, do you have any like memories of your first time seeing this or starting to understand what was happening in this film, this whole battle, or this whole sequence, or anything like that?
I for sure do, because this is the scene that I think I would credit as really solidifying my love for Star Wars. The first time I saw it, I just fell in love with the whole Death Star attack, and I fell in love with all the pilots immediately, just as a 7 or 8 year old. I don't know, something about that orange costume and the helmets, I immediately loved it, and that was the first action figure I ever got for myself, was Luke in that orange suit. So I have a deep connection. Yeah, I have a deep connection to the pilots and the X-Wings. And that whole sequence.
Yeah, I remember the feeling that I had when I first saw this, the whole trench run scene, really, I was just so impressed at the like practical effects of it all. I was like, oh wow, this movie came out in the 70s, and like, this just, for its time, it looks so cool. And like, I wanted to know more about how they did all of that with like the little miniatures and everything. So that's what I remember most. But yes, the orange flight suits, amazing. We still don't have those, and I don't know why. I really want to get some of those flight suits for us.
I mean, I have one. It's one of those like Ruby's costumes. Oh, like it's super huge and one size fits none, but I still have one.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I fell in love with this, with Star Wars, and with this, at least part of the movie. Is my mic being doing weird things? Okay, just a second. So, okay, I fell in love with the sound. My brother had this toy that was like a TIE interceptor, like I think it was Vader's, it must have been Vader's TIE interceptor, and it had all these pre-programmed voices in it that would go like, the force is strong with this one, and like, I can't shake him, and stuff like that. Like, I think another one was like, stay in attack formation. And just from like pressing all those buttons and hearing that whole thing so often is when I hear this, when I watch the movie, like I say when I hear the movie, because for me, like, the listening is so tied to the watching of it. I'm just instantly like, it's ingrained in my memory, those lines. Like the music, obviously, too, but like those lines and the cadence and the way they say everything is just so ingrained.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Woody in Toy Story with his pull cord. Like all of those lines could be on a pull cord of a Biggs doll or a Luke doll, you know.
When Squadrons came out, every time we would play, we would just keep parroting those same lines. Like, how many guns do you think? Think about 30 guns, 20 guns.
20 guns.
Like we just kept saying the exact same lines. I can't shake them. And it never got old. It's it's always fun.
Yeah, I can't shake them is like, I don't know if they realized how iconic that line would be, because it's just, it's in, like an endless gift. It's an endless gift. Okay. So let's warm up by listening to some of what we're getting into here. Okay.
Stand by alert. Death Star approaching. Estimated time to firing range, 15 minutes.
I love specifically the beginning of this.
Report in.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by. Red
there he is.
Standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Red 2 standing by.
Red 11 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
Lock air spoils in attack position.
Oh man, those drums there are just like the war nature of these drums are just, everything feels like we're preparing to get into something. Obviously we really are. And the harmony that's going underneath, like the bass notes are basically not part of the chord that the what's happening on top is. So there's this kind of disjointed like sound to what we're hearing.
Something that I thought of when listening to this, the first music I recall when I think of the trench run in the Battle of Yavin is kind of the end when Luke is going towards the exhaust port. And it's a lot of like da 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 da, like a lot of falling notes.
Like he's descending.
Right. This is like it's still causing anxiety and tension in me, but it feels a little more hopeful.
Like
the musics are building. Yeah. The musics is what I just said. The musics are building.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a lot of rising and falling.
I see it as more hopeful as they're going into it.
Mm.
No, it totally is. And like the whole war briefing, like basically in the last set of minutes, the last 5 minute chunk that I had, there was like almost no music. And so that guest and I were mainly just commenting on the non-musicness of it. Because like really all the music is saved for this battle. Like it's so eerily quiet when they're just in the briefing room, just talking about the plans and everything. And like seeing each other off and like, good luck. Like, I love that whole part in the warehouse looking hangar. And now we're just like starting to get into it. And it still is that beginning. Like you said, like there is a little bit of hopefulness to it. And it reminds me of like before going on stage at a concert or something, like everyone kind of being like, good luck. Like we got this, like kind of the little jitters, the kind of excitement of first starting something big, or like first going on stage, starting your speech, or starting your life-changing battle. You know, same thing.
Yeah. Instead of saying break a leg, they say break an S-foil.
Lock S-foils.
Yeah. And I love that call where they're all just checking in, like red 10, red 7, red 3, red 6. Did you or do you know who all the red numbers are?
Oh man, we've gone over them so many times for schmodown purposes.
At one point, I had you memorize the numbers in order. not necessarily their names, but then yeah, we did look up all of their names at one point.
We've definitely gone through them. So we got Red Leader is Carvin Drace, 2 is Wedge Antilles, 3 is Biggs Darklighter, 4 is John Bannon.
John 5 Bannon is Luke. Is the name? That's not a very Star Wars.
I think so. John D. Bannon. 5 is Luke, 6 Jack Porkins, 7 Harb Brinley, 8 Theron Nett. Now we're getting into the ones where I'm, 10 might be Theron Nett. I think 9 is
there's one with a
Nazo Natan.
Yeah, that's the one.
I think that's 9. And I'm probably mixing up 10 and 8. But I can't remember the last one.
I'm impressed you got that far.
Puck Nako, that's 10.
Puck Nako.
Yep.
Huh. All right. I can't say that I knew pretty much any of those. All right. Had a little brief hiatus. We're back now. Sorry about the audio issue that was happening before. Going to try to fix that in post as much as possible. But anyway, we're back to all the numbers. We're back to the backstage area. We're back to getting into this battle, which now we know from Rogue One that this isn't the first time that they have tried to do this, which kind of adds like a new weight to the situation. Droids. The droids are such a big part of this. Do you have any thoughts about R2 in this situation?
I do love that it sounds like he might be calling in as well. Aww. All the numbers go in. Like
R2 standing by.
And then right at the Red 5 standing by, and then he beeps. Uh-huh. Like, and I'm here.
Yeah. R2 really is the MVP. I say this all the time, but he saves the day constantly in Star Wars. So I get excited every time he pops up.
I also think that R2 has such a distinctive sound, and this whole film we've been now we don't even need to see R2. We can just sort of hear him, and we already have such a relationship with this character, which the sound is a huge part of, and it pays off in places like this. If you think about it, when we first meet, we hang out with R2 quite a bit over the course of this film when there's no music. So R2 and himself is a big part of the soundscape.
You just made me think of a moment from the Poe Dameron comic where someone is retelling the Battle of Takodana during The Force Awakens to someone else. And you don't know who is telling this story, but they talk about how, we lost this pilot and this droid, and then this pilot and this droid. And then at the end of the story, we realize it's BB-8 telling R2-D2 basically what he had missed while he was asleep. And I always thought that was a really nice moment.
Okay, now that reminds me of The Legends of Luke Skywalker, which is one of the junior or kids books leading up to The Last Jedi. And there's a short story. Basically, everyone in there tells a little story about something they've heard about Luke Skywalker. And the people listening are kind of is he even real? And one of the stories is told by a droid who says that the story has been passed down by other droids, and it's a droid to droid, but it's kind of it's a similar situation. I don't remember what the story was though, but but the idea of droids having their own language and way of communicating, and that I don't know how they communicate with each other. I'm sure it's not always by sound, but the way that droids like R2 and 3PO communicate to humans is by sound. So I always think about what went into the programmers' heads when they were designing how different droids would sound to communicate with their owners.
Yeah, they didn't think maybe we should make them all speak basic. Yep, we're going to make the owners learn their own binary language.
Yeah,
that's probably good, because some droids, I guess, the humans, they shouldn't be talking to humans, and humans shouldn't be having just let them be. They don't need to speak basic, or
yeah, yeah.
that does seem like the case with R2-D2, where they are viewed as just simple tools. That's all Uncle Owen wants them for at the start. And even Luke kind of sarcastically says hello to R2-D2 when 3PO introduces him. But, you know, Luke and the audience, both over the course of the film, get to know what droids are and then fall in love with them. And you're like distraught when R2 eventually gets shot.
Yeah.
And I just thought that, like, it's not that some of them are just meant to be tools, although they are, but for some of them, like, speaking basic would be, like, a kind of a downgrade. Like, speaking basic seems like an extra thing you add just because, like, of having to speak with humans or something. Like, it seems kind of like higher order to, like, not to be a droid that doesn't worry about that and to be a droid that just does its thing and doesn't need to worry about explaining itself. Like, you could have translators like 3PO who just translate and do stuff like that, do all that. Like, I don't know, if I were a droid, I probably wouldn't want to speak basic.
Yeah, 3PO says in The Force Awakens that he, you know, speaks over 7 million languages, and he loves to show that off to people. So
Lucas described R2, and like, while he was making Star Wars, he said R2 is basically a glorified plumber. Like, he's supposed to just be in the bowels of the ship fixing things, and that's it. So yeah, he wasn't exactly made to interact with humans. And then, like, over the course of the films, we see that he does quite frequently. Mm-hmm. But when he was originally conceived, it was just like, no, he's just supposed to be in the background and not really have any human interaction anyway.
He's a tool for characters like Luke and Anakin and Ahsoka to work their own feelings out on camera.
Just talk at him.
Yeah, which I think is, like, it's interesting how that's sort of starting to change in Star Wars. Like, the way that, because arguably Chewbacca would also be a character fulfilling that same role, at least originally. Mm-hmm. Sort of the characters that don't speak in a language that we understand. Yeah, but now we see a lot of droids that have, like, they're all kind of, they're not protocol droids, but so many of them speak now, like, speak basic and mm-hmm. Act like humans and make jokes and stuff. Yeah, just interesting. But R2 is here with Luke this whole battle. And not only that, like, Luke won't do it without him. He, like, doesn't, he declines the offer to switch out his droid. Like, he establishes, like, here is when we find out just how important R2 is to Luke, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, he's developed a pretty strong loyalty. I guess they both have to each other over the course of this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of Luke's arc, their own relationship as well. Like I said, he sarcastically says hello to R2-D2 at the start, and by the end he's like, no, this is my droid. And, like, I care about him and he cares about me and we're going to do this together. And don't you dare give me another one.
That's true. And also, I mean, we'll get to it later, but 3PO. I guess things like battles within a movie, like little, when I had Steele Saunders on for the trash compactor scene, that was a kind of another moment of, like, a plot within, like, a plot. It was sort of like this mini adventure within an adventure. And it kind of served to speed up the relationships or, like, show us how deep these relationships were after all. And here is, like, when we realize how much Luke cares for 3PO, for R2, and also how much 3PO does care for R2, even though he would pretend not to. And even Han, sort of in this general area, kind of, even though he leaves them, he's like, may the Force be with you. And we do see a few, like, bonding moments.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now, as the feel-good parts start to fall by the wayside, let's continue listening.
We're passing through the magnetic field.
Hold tight.
That's hot.
Put your deflectors on double front.
Death Star motif.
Look at the size of that thing.
Cut the shot, all right, too.
Accelerate to attack speed.
This is it, boys.
Red Leader, this is Gold Leader.
I copy, Gold Leader. We're starting
for the target shaft now.
We're in position. I'm going to cut across the axis and try and draw their fire.
oh, okay. That's so much. So much is happening. I'll ask what you think of that first. Like, what are you hearing in that, or what does it make you feel?
Nostalgic. I love X-Wing sound design. We haven't gotten to the laser blast yet, but I remember when the Force Awakens trailer came out and we saw an X-Wing chasing a TIE fighter and shooting at it. Just that blaster sound immediately took me back to the Battle of Yavin. So
yeah,
all the sounds of an X-Wing's engines and locking S-foils and stuff. I love all that.
It's very unique sound design for the X-Wing specifically, I think, and especially in A New Hope. All the sound design and the trench run bring back a lot of good memories of just getting really excited that this is going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen yet, but something's going to happen.
What I find interesting is that even just by listening to it, I feel like I can see it because the music and the point of view of what sounds we're hearing shifts, like, along with what we're seeing on screen. Like, obviously it corresponds with the cuts. So you'll hear like music, and then you'll hear like the sound of the comms, and then you'll hear like, you know, basically this 5 minute section. Like, I looked at the how many scenes it spans like 50 shot, how many shots it spans, like maybe 100 at least. Like, it spans like 100 different scenes or shots. Like, I looked at the, you know, like original screenplay or whatever, and it goes from scene 210 until 305, because there's so many quick cuts, like between all the cockpits and between all the various areas, and some of them are so short, but each of them, like, I don't know, it really puts it into perspective, like how labor intensive this is, obviously, and how the sound has to like match each of those atmospheres. Like, just changing from one cockpit to another, like, that's going to be a different soundscape.
I think George Lucas talked about freaking out the Fox executives because he turned in the script and it was so long, and he was like, hold on, like, it's because no one's ever done anything like this before, so every single shot he detailed what it should look like and what it was accomplishing. And so, yeah, it breaks all of those things down in the script, even though they're so, so quick. But every shot took so long to complete that it's like we only kind of have one chance to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds so harrowing, like, from not only the Battle of Yavin, but just the battle of like putting this film together and this whole section. So that's what we're hearing. And at the part where I just stopped, we heard a crescendo in the music where it kind of ramps up. It gets louder, and then there was a brief pause. And when I press play again, it's going to start with like this fanfare that's like actually the kickoff. So.
Heavy fire, boss. 23 degrees. I see it. Say hello.
Okay. There's so much going on again. That fanfare, did it sound familiar?
That's the Force theme.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that when the X-Wings are kind of like flying in like this?
Like, yeah, it's like as they're
finally
going into the surface.
I've seen the movie enough times now that I'm like, okay, I know that music is in this scene.
Yeah. I think the Force theme is so, it pops up in so many more places than one would expect. Also, obviously, in the throne room, which it makes some people do like a double take, realizing that the throne room is the Force theme. But yeah, the Force theme kind of naturally lends itself to like this fanfare style thing, because it has like, it starts with that perfect fourth, and which is also like a very common way to start fanfares. So a like bugle or something, a listener taught me this because I don't know that much about brass. Like a bugle or like some of the early horns didn't have it didn't have the buttons, the valves or whatever the button, like to get like a full chord, like, or sorry, to get like a full scale with like stepwise motion, like do, 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 do. So that's why so many fanfares and like old school, like trumpet calls or like reveille or taps or things like that will kind of have that sound of like do, 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 kind of like the same few notes. Yeah. Where it sounds very like open. I don't know if that makes sense, but I mean it's kind of like this. So the fourth theme conveniently starts with a perfect fourth. But then of course it goes into other notes. Do, 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 do. But a perfect fourth is a super fanfare-y, brassy, classic interval, I guess. Fourths and fifths, which is the main title of Star Wars too. Do, 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 do,
do. Yeah. Would that be like having a piano without the black keys?
Sort of.
Similar to the buttons on the brass.
Sort of, but like it would even be a step further. It would be like not only no black keys, but also missing some white keys.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is an interest. That's another good example though of like the framing of instruments in terms of like what their technical specifications are, what they can what music they can afford performers to do. So like technological advances in the making of instruments like changes the way music is made. It changes like mm-hmm. what is possible on an instrument, and the piano definitely was like an amazing invention, just an incredible invention. And brass and winds have developed quite a bit as well. So where were we? We were on that little force theme. Oh, and then right where we ended, I want to point listeners to Frank Lehman's complete catalog of the musical themes of Star Wars. So I'll play it. I'll rewind a little bit. But what we're hearing there is what Frank Lehman calls heroic descending tetrachords. And that just means the and you may recognize that also from the end credits.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it always makes me excited to hear.
Heavy fire, boss. 23 degrees. I see it. Stay low.
Red 5, I'm going in.
Luke, are you all right?
I got a little cooked, but I'm okay.
We count 30.
Okay, I had never noticed the tetrachords in there. I wouldn't have known what they were called unless you just said that, but I never noticed
but
you
that recognize
musical.
Them, like,
yeah. Yeah, once you pointed it out, I'm like, yep, there they are.
Anything else that you noticed?
Well, I wonder about like why John chose to write the Force theme into this part, and also thinking that at this point it wasn't the Force theme, it was Ben Kenobi's theme. And I guess either way, it still works because Ben is part of the Force now, but just like a subtle hint to Luke and the audience that victory is going to come through the Force more than anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Or that just because Obi-Wan is gone doesn't mean the Force is gone from this mm-hmm. movie. Luke is about to use it.
Yeah.
This opens up such an interesting discussion. And I'm glad that we're getting into it because I'm sure I'm not alone in being very interested in what happens with the Kenobi show, especially knowing that John Williams composed the theme for Kenobi and knowing that the Force theme originally started out as Ben Kenobi's theme. I think it is so interesting because we can retrospectively make connections, and that's what we're here to do. That's why I guess art is made, right? I mean, so we people can experience it and form connections. It's never supposed to be like a fixed, never like a fixed, you know, thing that, you know, never sees further analysis. In this case, I wonder if John Williams was actually thinking that or if it was just, it worked. So
that's, yeah, because I remember he talked about what he uses Princess Leia's theme when Obi-Wan dies. And he had some reasonings, but one of the reasons was that it just felt right in the moment. It sounded right. So
he's earned the right to be able to be like, you know what? It just sounded right to me.
I'm John Williams and I'll do what I want.
But also, like, at the time, this was just like another, this was just like another job, like another film to do. Like, he didn't know that it was going to be such a saga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there are also like subconscious ways that composers lay the groundwork for connections that is not necessarily like being a mastermind and planting a thing, but is also not the opposite where it's just completely devoid of any attachment whatsoever. I think like the same way that like fans make connections between things, I feel like composers have their own like emotional connections to things where things feel right. And it might be because of those reasons. But maybe not like explicitly, like a fully thought out idea, if that makes sense. Like, I think also in The Last Jedi, when the Emperor's theme is used when Snoke is like torturing Rey, one could say like, oh, he knew it was gonna be the Emperor was gonna be behind the whole thing all along. But one could also say that it just felt right because the Emperor's legacy is obviously still in this, you know, it's still affecting everyone. It's still, Snoke is still part of the Emperor's legacy. And so it, you know, it is appropriate whether it's a direct connection or not.
And so, yeah, it's like Palpatine's legacy is still wreaking havoc throughout the galaxy through this other vessel. But for a Star Wars fan to see that and hear his theme, they're connecting it and being like, oh yeah, this is very bad that's happening right now. Yeah. This makes me think of Palpatine and that's very bad.
Yeah, it's just dark side music. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily have to mean Palpatine. It winds up that, yeah, it worked out that way. Kind of the same with The Force Awakens, where it reuses some of the music where he's telling the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise from Revenge of the Sith. And everyone was like, that means Snoke is Plagueis. And like, nah, it's just dark side music.
Yeah.
Again, it kind of worked out that it had that Palpatine connection. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was intentional at the time.
Yeah, dark side music, I think is that's a good way to put it. I also think that like when it comes to Ben Kenobi's theme, because like we've talked about this many times on the show, obviously, and fans will talk about it all the time. But in episode 6 of this show, of this season, Frank Lehman came on and it was like a whole Binary Sunset breakdown. We talked about like everything about Binary Sunset, basically. Not everything, but it was a very detailed episode that went into the cue that was not used, the unused Binary Sunset cue, and what ended up being the Binary Sunset cue, and also like what it means. Like, is it Binary Sunset? Is it Obi-Wan/Ben? Is it Force? What does it mean in Star Wars, and like what defines it? And I think, like, as far as this movie goes, Ben is the Force to Luke. And I also think about like when Princess Leia's theme is played over Ben's death, there is a bit of like a new hope to it. Like, Ben is gone, and Ben is like what Luke was attaching to first. And now that he's gone, like, he has his new friends and he has to move on. Like, he has to, you know, not that go to Leia, but like Leia represents like the path forward in a way. And this Force theme is also kind of part of that. And also, like, literally we do hear Ben's voice in this, so he's still very much part of it. So I think as of now, like, it still works kind of for like Ben to equal the Force for Luke.
Yeah.
And to be, at least he's like weaning off of Ben being the only 4-seater.
Yeah, because early in the film, you know, we hear the message from Leia and she's talking to Obi-Wan and she's saying, Obi-Wan is my only hope. And then fast forward to the end of the movie, Luke is the hope now.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luke is the only hope now. With Force Ghost Ben's help and others.
Use the Force, idiot.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I never even thought about that. Obi-Wan being basically what everyone was depending on at first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that. And in a way, like, Vader almost is depending on Obi-Wan, too. Arguably, Vader doesn't... I can't remember the timing of when Vader knows for sure about his son. I think it's, like, maybe after... Does Dr. Aphra take... I feel like in Dr. Aphra, it takes place after A New Hope, and that's when... He learns after, yeah. So before then, like, he knows that he has to face his master alone when Obi-Wan comes on board. Like, he's fixated, you know, when all of them come to Darth Vader's home, the Death Star. It's a very depressing home.
Come away from home.
They come to his house, yeah, yeah. He's not like, oh, I have to go to my son, because he doesn't know about his son. He's like, he's facing his past. He's dealing with something from his past, but that something is Obi-Wan. It's not like he hasn't moved on to the next thing yet, which is Luke.
That's why, yeah, when their whole lightsaber fight, people are like, "Oh, it's so slow," and it's like, "Well, Obi-Wan is toying with Vader and also buying time for Luke." And when Obi-Wan disappears, Vader is like, what? Like, he's so confused because he doesn't realize what Obi-Wan was trying to accomplish with all that. So, yeah, he was just trying to buy Luke extra time.
Yeah. What a good dad. Okay, let's continue listening.
We count 30 Rebel ships, Lord Vader, but they're so small they're evading our turbo lasers.
We'll have to destroy them ship to ship, get the crews to their fighters.
Watch yourself. There's a lot of fire coming from the right side of that deflection tower.
I'm on it.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porkins.
I'm right with you, Red 3.
Okay, a lot of things are A lot of things are exploding. And also, I just want to call attention to the Death Star alarm. The Death Star alarm in the background is like the fast one. Like, I associate a few different alarms with this film, and this one is the fast version. We also hear it in Rogue One.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was faster in this one.
I just feel like I recognize the noise and never think about the tempo of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily faster than, I mean, I think it's a stable alarm, but there is like another alarm that is a slower alarm. I can't describe it, but there is one that's lower. It's like, ooh, ooh. And then this one is more like the, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, ooh. Like, it seems like they're maybe more in trouble, but yeah, the different ships, the different areas kind of have a slightly different alarm sound. Sometimes the same alarm sound is used, but I always like to pay attention to which alarm is being used in the hopes of being able to like figure out what either era we're in or where we are on. So it was interesting to hear like some of these sounds in like the Bad Batch or like other things, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
I liked hearing the little Imperial music, I guess, motif that they use in A New Hope that I always kind of forget about, because the Imperial March from Empire is the one you always relate back to the Empire. But then I watch A New Hope and I always forget about those little beats that they have where that dun 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 da 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 da, and that popped up in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another, like, a few people this season have mentioned really liking that and wishing that it showed up more later instead of sort of being completely overtaken by the Imperial March. But I really like that theme too. It's definitely more subtle and I don't know, probably easier to work into things without being obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up the Bad Batch, and I think they used it as well.
Totally.
And they used that Death Star, that dun, 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 dun. I think that was in Rogue One.
Yeah.
Is that the song or the part that plays at the very beginning when we first see kind of Vader coming onto the Tantive IV?
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Something like that, too.
Yeah, it's a very short, like, evocative motif. The ones that are short are always interesting to me. Like, Kylo Ren's is another really short one, and then some of them are very, very long, but can be shortened. Like, Leia's is super long. The Force theme is super long, but you could have shorter versions of them. But the Death Star motif is just, it's, you just need those four notes. You just need that that little short bit. I think of that like as a motto motif.
Yeah.
Okay. Did we get to the explosions that you were thinking of yet? You said something.
The blaster fire?
The
blaster.
Yeah,
you said there was
the
a sound.
Oh, the X-Wing blaster fire, yeah.
We heard the blasters from the X-Wing. They have such a unique sound. It's so bizarre, but it and maybe I'm the only one that thinks this, but they sound wet.
What?
Something about the sound of those X-Wing blasters. It sounds kind of wet and squishy. I don't know why. I know they're not.
I guess I can see that. I'm thinking of how I would spell it. It's not like a P-E-W. It's not pew, pew, pew. It's more like a whap, whap, whap.
Whap.
That's fascinating. Okay. Well, we're going to hear more of those. So I'm going to listen for that now. I always love when people have surprising ways of describing sounds, because sometimes the best way to describe a sound is like with another sense.
Mm-hmm.
Build like some sort of a sensory understanding around what it is.
Yeah.
That's really, I've literally never heard anyone say that before. All right.
Eject. I can hold it.
Pull up.
No, I'm all
right. The way that the sound just cuts out there. It's almost like elevator music.
That's what I said.
Really?
Luke, trust your feelings.
How it just cuts out there?
Earlier when we were watching this scene and it cuts to Tarkin and he's just kind of standing there looking very stoic. And I was like, it sounds like bad guy elevator music where they're like, it's everything's fine here. Nothing's wrong.
Everyone in the control room, just be chill. Yeah. They're evading our turbo lasers. It's no big deal.
No big deal. Yeah.
Bad guy elevator music. That's really funny and very accurate, I'd say.
Yeah.
I feel like villains or like bad guys are so often surrounded by purposely like the chillest music or like the quietest, most serene. I don't know. Maybe it's sort of like a serial killer image I have in my head too, where it's just like, I'm also thinking of like Hannibal, I think, or like, I think of them like just sitting there, like listening to classical music or just like,
Cause it's quiet. We talk about focus determines your reality all the time. Tarkin is very focused on, you know, he knows what he wants to do. There's nothing chaotic going on in his head. So the music that we hear when they focus on people like Tarkin should be a little bit more calm, because in his mind, things are going fine.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
He's in no danger. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, totally. He doesn't see a threat. He's so confident. He's definitely not like in the trenches with everyone.
Where the music is very chaotic.
Yeah, and the music like really conveys the different like the different state of mind of like the rebels at this point and someone like Tarkin, who, you know, even if he weren't complete, like he's either completely confident or he's also like in denial or a little bit of both. But yeah, music can convey that much more immediately than visuals can for me. If I just saw it cut to, I'm thinking like if that same level of sound carried over to when we cut to Tarkin, it would be completely different. It would have a completely different effect.
Yeah, you would think that he would be worried and not still very confident in his plan.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately for him. Yeah, overconfidence. let's keep listening.
Squad leaders, we've picked up a new group of signals. Enemy fighters.
This is heroic determination.
My scope's negative. I don't see anything.
Pick up your visual counting.
Here they come.
So what that was like, it's also related to the and the heroic determination incidental motif is the that does that make sense? Like just from me singing it?
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about, especially since you said it when it was playing. But that's those motifs, those really small ones are ones that I never catch. Like I remember when we were doing our Last Jedi minutes and I was like, I heard three themes and I was real proud of myself. And you were like, I heard 12.
Well, the thing is, like, these aren't, since these are not official or anything like that, like these are just it's not, they're not motifs. Themes are not things to be discovered. They're things that fans make connections to and then decide is a thing. Does that make sense?
Okay. Well, still, like, it's repeated.
They're like building blocks.
Yeah, but it's notes that I had never noticed got repeated before.
Mm-hmm. But when I, like, point them out, you know what it is. So it's not that you don't recognize it. It's that you haven't decided that it's important enough to be a thing to call attention to. And that's all that, like, people like me or people like Frank Lehman or people that put together, you know, catalogs or whatever, and people like you and like other areas do, is like just notice recurring things and then decide to like write that down, basically.
Yeah.
make that a thing. Yeah, like you could do that with like wipe the types of cuts, the types of like wipe cuts and whatever. It's all, yeah. So the way that it's described here is alternating chords with propulsive rhythm, closely associated with heroic descending tetrachords, which is what was earlier, used prominently in the battles of Yavin, Sail Barge, Endor, and various end titles. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Did we hear Biggs's death just now?
No.
That was Porkins. Porkins, okay.
Don't worry. As of this episode,
Biggs does not Biggs die lives. In this episode.
Biggs yeah. is... Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Biggs lives.
That's, I always shut the movie off after these
minutes. Yeah. Don't watch any further. All right. One on your tail.
One up, watch it. I can't see it. It's on me tight. I can't take it. I'll be right there.
Oh, the sound of those computers.
Several fighters have broken off from the main group. Come with me.
So that's interesting because Darth Vader doesn't have like the elevator music like Tarkin does. He doesn't have the same music necessarily as all the rebels, but if I were judging based on the music, I would say that Vader is starting to feel a little bit nervous, a little bit troubled, he's feeling a little bit stirred up here.
Yeah, I would say just the fact that he's out there in the fight in his own TIE fighter means that he's like feeling a little nervous and wants to get in there and kind of try and finish this job himself.
It also makes sense because he doesn't have complete faith in the Death Star the way the other Imperials do. He's like, the station's vulnerable. Like, I'll go out here and I'll take care of it. So yeah, I don't think he is just full on like, we're in no danger.
Do you think he's trying to protect the Death Star, or do you think he's on his own personal mission because he senses that something is, he senses a calling in the Force to do something out there, obviously probably related to Luke, but.
At least in the production of this movie, I think he's just being the good Imperial soldier and going out and protecting the Death Star. I don't know that, like, I don't see Luke as actively using the Force until his final trench run, and even then it's like halfway through it, and then Vader's like, oh, the Force is strong with this one. Mm-hmm. So in episode 4, I'm kind of like, ah, he's probably just protecting the Death Star, but, you know, it could be a subtle push from the Force that even if he doesn't recognize it,
yeah,
like, why not?
He's still very loyal to Palpatine, and Palpatine's, you know, he's pretty proud of what he's created on the Death Star, so I think a lot of that is too that Vader is doing what he's told from Palpatine.
So I have this theory that he's just on his completely on his personal mission here. I think he doesn't actually care about the Death Star that much. I think that's just he has ended up in this situation where he doesn't. Anakin has never cared about politics. He just is in the he just does the fights and kind of makes sweeping assumptions. He has never like really been like, let me actually try to figure this out. He just kind of makes sweeping generalizations and then is like, let me get my lightsaber out, basically. He's not really like that. Vader also, I feel like in this movie, he never is like getting super in the weeds about any of the plans. He'll be like, he will say certain things like, go to this and get that or whatever, but as long as Tarkin's in the room, he's just like, he suddenly becomes the kooky religious person. Like, the yeah. one who just doesn't, the one, like, just let Tarkin do all of that stuff. Like, Tarkin clearly cares more than Vader. Vader cares, like, I feel like Vader maybe cares more about his Force stuff, or, like, the Emperor. Like, I think he would care, I think he cares more about being a Vader, being a Sith or whatever, being doing Force stuff, personal stuff, than he does about being on the Death Star, which is just a byproduct of his relationship with the Emperor and a byproduct of like where he's ended up in life. You know, he didn't know he was signing up for all of that when he bowed to, you know, Sidious. But yeah, I think it is both. But like, I also think that here he's probably like, I don't know, let me try to help. I guess I'll help the Death Star, but also I feel like some sort of a calling in some way.
It definitely is obvious too in Empire, when Empire Strikes Back, when they find Hoth and he's like, they're there for sure. And I know it. And Ozzel's like, maybe they're not. And he's like, nope, right there. I feel it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he just wanted to go. Maybe, like, he knows that if the Death Star is blown up, that he's going to be the one that takes the blame for it. So he's just trying to avoid blame. But then that's exactly what happens in the comics. Everyone's like, you're the only survivor, so clearly it's your fault.
They've already printed up all the propaganda posters of Vader standing on the Death Star looking all cool.
Yeah. And just like Kylo Ren, like, the actual people who rose in the ranks of the Empire in the military kind of resent him. In a way, like, they fear him, but they're also just like, ugh, this guy.
Yeah.
Doesn't like actually know. He just knows that he's the Force, but he. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the Force theme again. TIE fighter. I love the strings in the background.
Red 5. There's a heavy fire zone in there. Red 5, where are you?
I can't shake it.
I can't shake it.
Can't shake it. Can't shake that line.
That cut back to the briefing room or the ready room where Leia is listening in. It reminds me of an episode of Battlestar Galactica where you don't get to see the squadron fighting the Vipers. It's all from the CIC, the command center, and you just hear the chatter, and it's like very intense. And I was just imagining what it would be like to just hear that, like, oh, your friend's in trouble, where's Red 5? Red 5's got one on him. And Leia's like, oh God. And then once Wedge saves him, she breathes a sigh of relief.
It puts you in the perspective of, yeah, the people that are listening in.
That are just stuck there and can't do anything. Uh-huh. And they're waiting to see how it comes out.
Yeah. I think like the stance that Leia has looking over the like whatever screen thing is like, I feel like her stress in that moment. It also kind of like things can get misconstrued when you're just on the receiving end of all of that comms chatter. And I also think of when like in the trash compactor, when 3PO's like,
yeah,
thinks that they died.
Dying.
Yeah.
Curse my metal body.
So yeah, we had the Force theme again on in the fanfare thing. And then the strings are doing some interesting things. The anchor, I think I would say like the anchoring melody or the anchoring music, I guess, is the stuff happening in the brass, but the strings are adding some tension on top. They're like, dee, 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 dee. We'll probably hear it a little bit more, but basically like every few seconds, I feel like the music changes, like it's pretty frenetic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on him, Luke.
Hold on.
Blasted Biggs, where are you? Thanks, Wedge.
Good shooting, Wedge.
Red Leader, this is Gold Leader. We're starting our attack run.
I copy, Gold Leader. Move into position.
Stay in attack formation.
I love how they all have like a different intercom sound.
And locked in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you meant by the? Is that the? Are those the wet sounds?
Yes. Because the. The TIE fighters sound much more mechanical.
They do. Now that I like tried to spell one of them, I'm thinking about how they all sound. Where yeah, TIE fighters are more of like a choo choo choo.
Uh-huh.
I agree with you on the wet thing. I have decided.
Sometimes it's easier to hear than other times. It depends on how much other noise is in the background. But yeah.
Now I'm very curious how that sound was designed or how it was made, because okay, in technical, like in sound terms, or in if we're talking about like the amplitude envelope of how of that sound, like that would be something with a long attack, because it doesn't like reach its amplitude, like something like the TIE fighter shooting would be a short attack, because it's like it reaches its peak amplitude like immediately. Like that one's more like it's like slower to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it is definitely like I think about like when if you're ever like playing around with reverb or with like different effects, you can like add, you can make them wetter or drier, and sometimes like if you're on a reverb effect or plugin or whatever and you make it wetter, you're basically adding more, you're making it more saturated is what that is. And I hear that in the X-Wing shooting sounds. It sounds like messy a little bit too. It sounds a little bit like it may have been a technical limitation. That might be the reason, but
well, yeah. Messy is a good way to describe like the rebel fleet.
The rebel
is
fleet,
yeah. Yeah, that's George wanted the rebel ships to look cobbled together and messy compared to the TIE fighters that are all standardized. And yeah, their shots sound more, yeah, they're just fast, mechanical.
Like you said about, you think of it how you would spell it. Uh-huh. You would need more letters to spell their shots than you would need to spell the TIE fighter shots.
That's so true. Even okay. Now, one thing also that has always that's been kind of funny for me to listen to is when the stormtroopers run, they also have that like super. It sounds like obviously like tinny or like plasticky or whatever, but it sounds so like punctilious. Like it sounds so just like pert and quick, and like the way that they like when they're running, it's just like Yeah.
It's like they're wearing tap shoes.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. It's just like such a pristine little like click when they run. Yeah. That's funny. Okay. So I can see like parallels now. Maybe it was unintentional, but probably not. Between just the perkiness or the cleanness, I guess, of the sounds associated with the Empire, and also like visually their like clean lines and all of that. Like they get to the point more in their sounds and in their visuals, and the Rebels are sort of like cobbled together. A little bit wetter.
The stormtrooper boots don't have any shock absorption in them. They're just like a piece of wood or
just
something
like factory.
In there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Interesting connections we're making today. Near the end.
But no power to front deflector screen. Switch all power to front deflector screen.
How many guns do you think, Gold 5?
Say about 20 guns. Some on the surface, some on the towers.
Death Star will be in range in 5.
So that was the end.
I just thought of something. One of our friends loves Y-Wings, but their comms sound like the worst ones.
Well, they're older ships.
Yeah. So, okay, that makes sense then. Yeah.
Not that they knew that at the time, but yeah.
Wait, why did Y come before? They're older, but
they're made by different corporations too.
Oh my God.
So someone made a Y-Wing and NCOM was like, well, I'm going to make an X-Wing.
Yeah.
So,
every time you hear one of the Gold Squadron guys, their comms sound a lot worse than the Red Squadron.
And Xantha, you pointed out that all of their comms sound different. And that's something I feel like I just read that in the making of Star Wars, is that they wanted it to sound different in everyone's cockpit, like it wasn't all standardized where... But yeah, the X-Wings sound different. The Y-Wings sound different. But if you look at the TIE fighter to the TIE interceptor, like they sound the same, despite looking slightly different. It's so standardized.
Are you talking about the like Rinzler book, The Making of Star Wars?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I really have to read that. Okay.
Do you know if it's really good.
Do you know if it was George Lucas's idea to have the comms all sound different? Or was that a Ben Burtt Creative Liberty?
I feel like I read that recently. I read like 4 making of books in a row. I think it was in Rinzler. I'll see if I can find it and send it to you.
Cool. Because George Lucas had like a very clear idea of sound and music, the sound and music he wanted. So I feel like, I don't know. My respect for my awe, I guess, of George Lucas's vision and like, basically like the audacity of his vision at the time, it grows with a lot of things that I'm reading.
He listened to all those radio shows for so long, and that's a lot where a lot of his inspiration came from. So I think he learned to pay a lot more attention to sound because of that.
That's so true. The last thing, what was the last, I had one more thing to say, but I can't remember what it was. I think it was, there was this one part where something's blowing up or like there's a shooting sound, but because the scene, like the shot changes midway, we don't hear the end of it and it's just cut off there. So that's just another good example of how the music and sound just completely change when the visual perspective changes.
Mm-hmm.
John Williams, like, this is definitely quite a big piece of music, a big cue of John Williams. And he talks sometimes about how, like, the things that he writes, obviously, because it's part of a film, will sometimes be completely inaudible. And this is one of those things where, like, you can hear the music, but you can't hear it, like, super loud. You can't. The mix, it's probably lower in the mix here. So if you were to want to listen to the music full out without the sound effects and everything, you could find it on a couple of the soundtracks. like the special edition one, the full track is like not on all the soundtracks. It's not on the one that's on Spotify. But this is called The Battle of Yavin. The full thing is not in the track called The Last Battle. But this one is called The Battle of Yavin, parentheses, launch from the fourth moon, / X-Wings, draw fire, / use the force. yeah, so that's where we are right now. Did you have anything else about the music or sound in the set of minutes, or just anything about this set of minutes that you didn't bring up?
I tried to just download, or I did download The Making of Star Wars onto my phone and just searched cockpit real quick to see if I could find that sequence. I couldn't, so I'll look later. But
something made you laugh in that last one.
Red
leader to gold leader? Because I feel like they reused that line.
It was just all the comm chatter in general. It, like I mentioned with the playing Squadrons a couple years ago when it first came out, and we were all just having a blast. But the way that some of them deliver lines, where it's just like, switch all shields, switch all power to front deflector shield. Like,
so dramatic.
Yeah, all of the pauses. And we were just having so much fun emulating that and how dramatic they would make everything.
How many guns you think?
Yeah.
I say about 20 guns.
Some on the service, some on the tower. It's so fun.
And this is in the game?
Yeah, that was just like us playing the game together and over our own microphones through Discord. We would be spouting all that stuff off for no reason.
You have all those lines in your head like a soundboard, and they just come out naturally no matter what's happening in the game.
That's a very useful skill for life, Alex. I'm sure it comes in handy quite a bit. I don't know if any of these people were radio announcers, but I'm sure you know about like how a lot of radio announcers dubbed voices here, like Californians.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so there's like quite a radio hosty voice to some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Is anything else for you, Molly?
I think we covered everything. I love that I learned about the wet sounds. I
learned about the wet
sounds. I'm gonna keep an ear out for that next time.
you're the one that brought it up.
I know. It just like popped into my head. I was like, that sounds wet.
Well, it's like you said it, and now you learned that it's actually an audio term.
Yeah.
See, now it's a motif.
Yeah,
we will notice.
Well, now I want to go and see how they made the sound effects for those, because I know like the lightsabers were made by hitting power lines or something.
I think those were like just regular blaster pistols. Mm-hmm. So that was power lines.
Okay.
So Burt probably did something similar. But yeah, I don't know how he made some of these blaster sounds specifically for the ships.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the time the way that sound design was done was so different than how it is. In many ways it was very different than how it is now. He was able to do a lot more of just capturing and sort of playing around with capturing things in his life. Whereas now I think, I mean, you could just massage sound waves in your computer, like in your DAW, and you can start with things and just manipulate them electronically. Basically what I'm saying is like this very tactile way that Ben Burt put together different things and like combine different sounds, and then it imperfectly recorded things, and then that was the sound, an audio recording rather than it just being generated completely like digitally. Maybe that's why it sounded wet, or maybe that's why a lot of the sounds are being re-recorded now is all I'll say.
yeah because like back then, yeah, you couldn't just like search your sound library for different sounds. You had to just go around with a little recording device and make them yourself.
Yeah, and the lightsabers are. Listeners, if you haven't checked out the laser sword sound design episode, we did a deep dive this season, episode 7, about the sound design of lightsabers in like 4 different levels of complexity. So it went really, we talk about the clashing, the humming, the hum buzz, the different, the idle, the retraction, the different types of whatever. It was a whole thing. So yes, Ben Burtt, pretty good at doing stuff.
Pretty good at his job. Yeah.
I think he's got a good career ahead of him.
Yeah. Okay, then I guess we can move on to the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire, which is the same 3 questions that I ask every guest, and you can just say whatever comes to your to the top of your mind, or there's no pressure with having a perfect answer. Some people get very nervous about this. All right, we'll go Molly first. In exactly 3 words, what does Star Wars sound like?
So I thought about this one and I asked Alex, I was like, does this mean 3 separate words or like a 3-word phrase? So I went with 3 separate words. Hope, bravery, and curiosity.
I love it.
You went way different than I did.
What did you say?
Whap, chew, pew.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say wet, wet, wet.
No, because I just made that discovery.
That's funny. All right.
That's it. That happens every time. Molly will go deep and I'll go like very literal.
What's something related to Star Wars music or sound that you're curious about or want to learn more about?
I guess this counts as also going deep. I'll say that I'd like to learn more about the psychology behind how different chords of music makes someone feel, which I realize is very difficult to talk about because it can feel different for everybody, but just how sound evokes different emotions.
That's such a good answer.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex?
Now you're making me question everything. I mean, just from this one alone, I'm like, I want to know how they made the X-Wing noises. Because, yeah, I'd never thought about that. I always heard about the power line thing that Ben Burtt did. But, yeah, specifically, I want to know how he makes the X-Wing sound.
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, now I want to know about that, too. And finally, what is a score or soundtrack that you're fond of, besides anything Star Wars?
I wrote down a couple. Okay. I'm sure we're both going to say Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Tarantino movies are always fun for me. The soundtracks are always great. Moulin Rouge, to stick with Ewan McGregor related things. And we just recently saw the new West Side Story and it was fantastic.
I was just going to say Lord of the Rings because I feel like that was the first time that on my own I noticed what a composer could do. I remember in Return of the King, so I would have been 16, I think, when that movie came out, but I just remember when they're crawling up Mount Doom and then music from the Shire starts playing and I was like, oh my god, like what a brilliant choice. And it's like it wasn't subtle, but I felt like I understood scores a lot more that day.
Yeah,
like the Grinch, my ears grew 3 sizes that day.
That's so like Lord of the Rings as a whole, like as a saga.
Yes.
That's very, and both of you said that. Okay. That's cool. A lot of people have said that and it makes me want to get into Lord of the Rings, which is a whole commitment, but the score has definitely, it's like very cited as like one of sort of, I don't know, maybe a game changer, but like it's definitely held up as like one of the cornerstone, you know, scores. So
well, yeah, it's really interesting because Howard Shore is a big Tolkien fan and I believe lobbied to be the composer for the movies, went to New Zealand and was there for a lot of the production, but he also wrote the music to the books. Like he would read a chapter and he would write for the book. and the universe, not so much exactly the movie.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a mix of both, but I just think that's so cool that he was like, I'm going to write music for Tolkien's world. And it worked.
Yeah. You can hear a difference, I think, because of that.
That's really cool. I didn't know that. That's awesome. We were talking about Star Wars, but I'm definitely going to check that out. Listeners, again, if you want to listen to this track, it's called The Battle of Yavin. And where can people find you all online?
Our YouTube channel is called Star Wars Explained, and we're on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah, under basically the same name. We're on Patreon as well, and we're gearing up for Obi-Wan. So we're going to be releasing our reactions to all the episodes for that on our Patreon.
Awesome. I'm super excited for Kenobi. I'm kind of like blacked. I've like blacked out. I'm so excited that I'm overwhelmed. So it's just intense to even think about, but that is coming soon. And thank you so much for coming back on Star Wars Music Minute. Both of you are return guests and I always enjoy having you. Listeners, thank you for making your way to almost the end of A New Hope. We only have a few episodes left of this film. And Solo season is also beginning at this point. So just look out on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts for 5 minute at a time analyses of the music and sound of the Star Wars movies, A New Hope and Solo at this point. You can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and pretty much everywhere you get your social media. So do that. And I will see you next week on Star Wars Music Minute.